You think your world is safe. It is an illusion. A comforting lie told to protect you. Enjoy these final moments. For I have returned. So, shall we begin?
All right, Lenny! Buckle up! It's showtime!
Sports get so much attention, and so many people tune out the real world, that I try to take advantage of the opportunities to talk about the real world when sports lends itself to that and try to open people's eyes. I did not go as far as I would like to go because my thoughts on the NRA and America's gun culture, I believe the NRA is the new KKK.
Wow.
And that the arming of so many black youth and loading up our communities with drugs and then just having an open shooting gallery is the work of people that, you know, obviously don't have our best interest.
Welcome to the program, folks. It is live. It is Reset Radio on blogtalkradio.com. 1 minute after the hour on this, January the 9th, 2012. I want to thank all the people who tuned in yesterday for our show with Sabrina Lamb, who was on CNN earlier today, I believe roughly about like quarter to 11 o'clock today. And she sent me a nice shout out, so I wanted to thank her for that. And I know I'm getting some feedback on my position on this whole shoddy low thing, but whatever, we'll deal with that later on. Folks, today's show is probably going to be all over the place because there are a lot of subjects to talk about. It is Wednesday. It's hump day. You know what time it is. It's hump day.
Come on. Do the humpty hump. Come on and do the humpty hump. Check me out, y'all. Do the humpty hump. Just watch me do the humpty hump. Yeah. Do you know what I'm doing? Doing the humpty hump.
So, being Wednesday, hump day is usually a big news day because everything is all over the place. I don't know whether or not you heard, but Vice President Joe Biden said today that the President of the United States, Barack Obama, is going to start looking into executive order to get gun control into this country. Of course, this is a knee-jerk liberal reaction to the Newtown shooting in Connecticut. We'll get into all that audio. We've got plenty of that to get into. We also have to get into Rob Parker. Rob Parker was the ESPN analyst on First Take, who has just recently been fired from ESPN. If you have not heard, he was fired. Part of his firing had to do with a non-renewal of his contract after being with ESPN for 6 years. But the spokesman said that, of course, it was due to the backlash for his comments about Robert Griffin III, RG3, more commonly known of the Washington Redskins football team. We'll get into some of his audio, and I think that this audio in particular kind of sealed his fate. And again, I'll never, ever rip apart somebody who has to make a comment about something if indeed they need to clarify what they need to say. But don't backtrack. See, that's what it is that is your undoing. I also have to talk about Al Jolson, or as many of you may know him, Tom Al Jolson Joyner, on his syndicated program, who said something what I would consider to be extremely niggerific. Real niggerdom coming out of the Tom Joyner show. We'll play that audio as well. We've got that audio. Back to Joe Biden. I want to play some audio that he was pretty much outright exclaiming that, you know, Barack Obama is not going to take his guns. I have that audio. We'll get into that as well. And Barack Obama's statements that followed the Newtown shooting. So plenty of stuff to get into today. Like I said, without the without the whole idea of going all over the place. It's just that there's a, it's a news-filled and information-filled show. So we're going to go in a lot of directions today, and we'll get into that. Also, I have to make sure that I get into Al Gore and the backlash that he's getting from his current TV staff, or soon-to-be former staff, who are outraged at what it is that Al Gore did with his sale of Current TV to Al Jazeera. Let me begin with a Reese on the Radio rant about Robert Griffin III and about the conversation that so-called Negroes are having. I don't want to say it's privately, because no one's listening to these Negroes. So it's happening in broad daylight, but no one's paying attention. And they should be paying attention. I think that white people have a fear of having a conversation about what Negroes are talking about. They won't shine any light on it out of fear of retribution. And that's fine. I'm not here to stick up for the white man to have to do his bidding. But I have a big issue with people who have a fear of dealing with commentary that sounds completely outlandish. Now, folks, the truth is this. Blacks are racist, just like any other group. Just like any other group, they're racist. And they are more overt than many of their white or Latino or even Asian counterparts. See, the Asian counterparts, they have a buffer to keep you from recognizing their true racism. They have their language. Asians can speak Chinese, Cantonese, Japanese, whatever. They can speak their language amongst their own group. They can call you nigger spick kike and you'd never know. They have a buffer. And many within their community, if they were to hear their Chinese brethren use that commentary, no one would turn around and say to the offended group, hey, did you hear what that Chinese man, that Cantonese man, that Japanese man, that Mongolian, did you hear what he just said about you? They wouldn't do that. They keep that within the ranks. If they're not sad, if they're unhappy with one of their own criticizing another race, they would then chastise that person in their own language. They would do all that. They wouldn't turn around and they would say, hey, I heard what it is that you said. They wouldn't do it. They just wouldn't do it. Latinos, Latinas, same thing. If a Spanish person were to say something offensive about another race, a Spanish person would then say to that Spanish person, no, the Spanish person who didn't like it, would say to his brethren in their own language that what they said was offensive. They would say all that. That was a horrible Spanish. But whatever. You know what I'm saying. El gato, el Jennifer Lopez, a escuela, you know, whatever. They would say that. They wouldn't say it in English. Exactly. Thank you, JC. I appreciate that. But they would never say it in English. Now, any other group. Now, let me explain to you why. Before I get into this, let me explain to you why they wouldn't say it in English. It's because they know that if they were to alert the other party, that they would be deemed a traitor to their race. Even if that were to happen within that dialogue in their own language, that person being the racist would still appreciate that they didn't embarrass them publicly by excoriating them or ripping them apart in English. They would still appreciate that. They would get into that dialogue and blah, 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 blah. And it'd be until somebody got really, really annoyed, and then they would say in English, you know what that guy just said about you? Then, you know, that would be the case. But that wouldn't be their first, that wouldn't be their first response or their first reaction. But see, blacks don't have that buffer. See, blacks can't use jive to cover up their language towards their racism. Blacks, believe it or not, folks, blacks hate Latinos. They do. Blacks hate Jews. It's true. Blacks hate the Chinese. It's true. They despise them all in ways that you couldn't possibly fathom. But no one's ever going to scrutinize them for it. No one's ever going to say anything about it. So they don't need a buffer because no one's going to say a word. But there are people out there who got enough guts. I've got enough guts to just call it as it is. And this is not to say that because blacks are racist that other groups are not. Oh, I know other groups are. Hey, they're racist in all groups. But blacks are not absolved of that racism. This old BS that, oh, that blacks can't be racist. BS. It's garbage. They are, can be, and will be. Now, I want you to pay attention to Tom Al Jolson Joyner, this cooning and buffooning Negro, because that's what he is. He shouldn't even open his mouth about the conversation of race. He shouldn't even do it. You're a cornball Negro. You always have been. Most of your career has been based on you shucking and jiving for the white man's money. That's a fact. You have been a non-offensive Negro for decades. You have never, ever once been racially charged. You've never had the race battery on your back. You never had it. You were a clown. It took Barack Obama's nomination to the presidency for you to finally decide to be a tough guy in the matters of race and start calling out the white man. You were empowered by the election of Barack Obama. You had been around for decades and you were shucking and jiving, and then Barack Obama becomes the president of the United States and now you are, I don't know, racially enlightened? But I want you to hear this garbage that Tom Joyner is spewing on his show. Now, it's not extremely important, but I need you to hear what it is he has to say. And to set it up, what he said was, or what he's talking about, is Robert Griffin III. Saying that Robert Griffin III was the product, or his injury for that matter, at Sunday night's wild card playoff game, that he was a subject of racism by the coach Mike Shanahan. Now, even though he's corrected later on in this diatribe, he still sticks to his meme, which in and of itself contradicts his claim, but they don't care. They put it out there, they like that they put it out there, and they are pulling at the heartstrings of stupid niggas. That's a fact. Pulling at the heartstrings of stupid niggas. He knows it. He enjoys it. And this is the reason why he's a clown. But listen to what he says about RG3 and his injury in Sunday night's playoff game against the Seattle Seahawks. Now, I thought I was ready. There we go.
I'm just going to say it. I think Mike Shanahan, the coach of the Washington Redskins, could be compared to the character that DiCaprio plays in Django.
You're absolutely right.
Because
keep fighting, Negro.
Keep fighting. Keep fighting. RG3 had no business playing.
At all.
But the team's doctor says that he was not cleared to play. Right. Mike Shanahan put him in there anyway. Just if you saw the movie, just like DiCaprio.
With the Mandingo.
Had the Mandingos fighting in the room. That's what he did. That's
Kirk
what he did
Cousins
to RG3.
He did a good job when he came in there, man.
Uh-huh.
He really did.
And then after him, you did a good job, N-word. Good job.
Now, did RG3 play any part in that in saying he was good to go?
Yeah, he said he wanted to play.
He probably did.
So there's culpability
so he
on
keep
both
his
sides.
Job.
Yeah.
Yeah, he wants to win.
Yeah, he wants to keep his job. Right.
He wants the team to win at all costs. But somebody is responsible, and that should be Mike Shanahan, saying, okay, son, I know you want to go in. The doctor said you're not clear. That's Mike Shanahan.
Hmm.
He's going to get the boy killed.
Man.
So T.O. is really not the quarterback killer here anymore, is he? Okay.
No.
Okay.
And you don't know how bad the injury is.
No, that's true, because it's been ongoing, and now they may have exacerbated it.
And he's re-injured it.
Yeah.
And will he be able to come back like Adrian Peterson?
Man,
and
what a comeback, yeah.
No,
I don't know.
Not likely.
I don't think so.
He's as bad as the white man in Django.
He's as bad as the mean white man in Django.
Now, first of all, Tom Joyner admits he has no clue what took place. But it doesn't in any way prevent him from saying what it is that he said. Now, folks, if you haven't heard this, let me be the first to tell you. RG3 ignored the doctor, wouldn't even let the doctor examine him. RG3 runs out onto the field when the offense has to take the field. The doctor looks at Mike Shanahan, the coach. Shanahan looks at the doctor and he says, "Is he all right?" And the doctor, who never got an opportunity to examine the leg, says, "I guess he is. He's going out there." So Shanahan doesn't want to stop the game. He can't cost himself a timeout or whatever to pull him off the field. He just says, "Okay, the guy's running out there. All right, I trust him if he's going out there to do it." RG3 gave a press conference and says, "I'm the best chance for this team to win. I know that I can win this game." And he goes out there and he does it. But he's not cleared. But what would make Mike Shanahan the slave owner here? RG3 runs out there and ignores everything. RG3 just wants to get out there and win the game. And then just imply, as you know, one of his little sidekick Negroes on the Tom Warner show, "Oh, he wants to keep his job." He wants to keep his job? That's not why RG3 went out there. RG3 went out there because he wants to win the game, and he thinks he's the best chance to... He's in his first playoff game as a rookie. He's a young guy. What is he, 22 years old? He's not listening to his body. He's hopped up on adrenaline. He's hopped up on his passion to win. It was a dumbass move. But what can you expect from a young guy who's in his first playoff game? He's trying to take his team to the championship. He's a fighter. He's a winner. He's willing to put his body on the line and do anything to win. But that's on him. But Mike Shanahan is responsible. And to evaluate that, as this fool-ass Negro, Tom Joyner, is saying, "Oh, Mike Shanahan should have dragged this out." If Mike Shanahan would have dragged him out, stopped the game, put a timeout, and says, "Listen, look, we don't know. We got to get this knee looked at. We're going to bring in Kirk Cousins and let him take over for a couple of downs while we evaluate the knee. Look, if these guys score, whatever, and then we'll try our best to come back. We got to make sure we look at you because we don't want to put more damage." Had they done that, Wouldn't Tom Joyner had said after they lost the game, you see that white man pull out the nigger and put the white boy in? He didn't trust him because he's black. You can't win for losing with people like Tom Joyner, who is now all of a sudden like the oppression expert. You haven't been this guy in years. You know civil rights activist Tom Joyner. You were on your way out. This is the reason why you suck. You always did. And now all of a sudden you think that you're relevant and you're nothing more than a piece of garbage. I'll be the first to tell you. You were a clown in the beginning. You're always going to be a clown. And now all of a sudden you think you got some black power movement on. You're a clown. And then to go out there on your radio show with absolutely no information about the subject, I don't even believe that you're a true football fan. I think you're a figure skating fan. You probably like the Ice Capades. You don't know football. You don't watch football. You are not a football analyst. The only time you're interested is when the player happens to be black and he might be on TMZ. You don't know anything about the game. You probably never played any organized sports. Unless there was Tiddlywinks with your little gay friends on your radio show. Yeah, I said it. You know, you and your friends with the 7 to 8 buttons on your two-piece suits. You and Steve Hardly Funny. Now you're supposed to be man about town. You know everything. All of a sudden you're political and social savant. You're nothing more than a bunch of clown-ass Negroes past their prime. I could give two craps whether or not they like it or not, but the truth is that that's all it is that they are. Low-information radio hosts. No-information radio hosts. If you were to get in a debate with any one of these people, get them on the phone and ask them a serious question about politics or pop culture, they'd be lost. Like a black man in the dark with no flashlight. By the way, Sally D is saying he's done. I don't think he'll ever be the same player. Sad. Little gay friends, are you begging to be taken off the air? Oh, they know who they are. Little fruit pies over there at the Negro stations. I might even forward this audio to the losers. Steve Hardly Funny and Tom Al Jolson Joyner. I'm offended by their commentary because the worst part about what it is that they do is that they spew this to a bunch of low-information idiots who believe it when they hear it. Oh, you heard what Al Jolson? You heard what Al Jolson said? Yeah, that's right. I called him Al Jolson. You heard what Tom Joyner said? Tom Joyner said that Mike Shanahan is a slave owner. Slave owner? I mean, it's absolutely astronomical. When we come back, I got to get into Rob Parker. Rob Parker, who thinks that RG3 is a conversation that's happening in the hood, a conversation that black people are having. Well, folks, I'll be the first to tell you, I've got few black friends. I do. I have few black friends. I don't have a lot of black friends. Not a big fan of niggas. I'll be the first to tell you, not a big fan of them. Black people, I love. Niggas can't stand. And immediately when niggas start acting like niggas, I keep it moving. I have no fear and no shame of that. If they don't like it, F them. they'll privately tell each and every one of them their friends that they don't like niggas either. But when they get around me, they'll say something really, really stupid like, I can't believe that you say that. Shut up. You get around your friends and family, you do the same thing. You see them wilding out of the nightclub, you pack up your belongings and you leave. You see them on the corner selling drugs, slap fighting each other, slinging rock, you cross the street. You're not fooling anybody over here, so stop pretending. But I need to get into Rob Parker, recently fired from ESPN. And what his problem is with black men who do not live their lives as a color, that drives him up the wall. This upsets him. This makes him, I don't know, angry. This makes him uncomfortable. He wants to understand who these people are. For some odd reason, there's some sort of psychological breakdown of people like RG3, O.J. Simpson, Tiger Woods, and the like. People like me. And apparently there's some in-depth investigation going on at the barbershop about RG3's blackness. I'll let him explain that when we come back at Truth on the Radio.
Basically, I'm complicated. I have a hard time taking the easy way. I wouldn't call it schizophrenia. It's deep how you can be so shallow. And I'm afraid because I have no fear. And I didn't believe in magic until I watched you disappear. I wish you were here. And I could go on and on and on.
But who cares?
Stop hating. Stop hating. Stop participating. Stop participating, star. Come on, twinkle, twinkle, baby. Twinkle, twinkle.
Illustrate the paper space off the pens that paint. Then design what habit national geography.
holographic, the magic was tailor made that event plus flavor that's automatic.
We're not falling, we take it back to the days of yes, y'all in. We're holding on to what's golden.
On the stage, I raise and I'm rolling.
We're not falling, a shot calling. We take it back to the days of yes, y'all in. We're holding on to what's golden.
On the stage, I raise and I'm rolling.
Melancholy, mundane, saute the hot flame. Big rings, fat chains, they all quest for the same. No name, use fame, strictly new to the thing. We stay true to the game and never bring it to shame. We tight like dreadlocks, a red fox, a ripple. We pass part of simple and smash the artist in you. The saga continues, this I won't get into, cause there ain't enough bars to hold the drama that we've been through.
Yo, we still the same with the little fame. A little change in the household name, but ain't too much change. We in the game, yo, but not to be vain. I refrain from salt grain to season up my name. We entertain for a mutual gain from close range. Steady aim, my drum at your head to hit the brain. I'm labor ready, roll scholar for the dollar. Work for mine, pay me by the hour.
We're not falling, we take it back to the days of yes, y'all. We're holding on to what's golden.
On the stage, I raise and I'm rolling.
We're not falling, a shot calling. We take it back to the days of yes, y'all. We're holding on to what's golden.
On the stage, I raise and I'm rolling.
Herman Munster, the word enhancer, sick of phony monsters controlling the dance floor. I'm in them dark places, catch you when you stark naked. Your heart races as we poke you for your chart spaces. The taunt chases me bringing these hot styles through. Some of you bum a few cheers from shock value. Word power can plow through acres of cornfields. Paragraphs cut like warm steel, perform ill.
We're not falling, we're taking back to the days of yes, y'all. We're holding on to what's golden.
On the stage, I raise it up.
A shot calling, we take it back to the days of yes, y'all. We're holding on to what's golden.
Reset the Radio, we are back live on blogtalkradio.com, January the 9th, 2013. Okay, so Bob Parker, as you may know, was suspended from ESPN. Originally, it was supposed to be a 30-day suspension for his comments. I tried to find the audio, but I was having some computer trouble, but whatever. Not important. The bottom line was that, according to Bob Parker, formerly of ESPN's First Take, said that there was, not a consensus, that there were people out there who were referring to Robert Griffin III as a cornball brother because he has a white fiance and because he's an alleged Republican, which in and of itself, that is supposed to discount you as a black man because there are levels of distinction in order for you to be black. You must first date a black woman, be involved with a black woman. You must be a Democrat. And further into his commentary, Rob Parker says that RG3 was not down for the cause. What that cause was, I'm not exactly certain of. I've asked that question often, what is the cause? No one's ever been able to tell me in the black community when I say, what's the cause that we are supposed to be down for? It is interchangeable according to the black people that I speak to. There isn't a particular cause. There appears to be plenty. They range depending on the time of day or the time of season. So in this sort of commentary that came out on ESPN, this got Rob Parker suspended because people were outraged that anybody would question someone's authenticity, if you will. And why was there a conversation about race in regards to Robert Griffin III? Because he said, look, when asked the question by reporters, and, you know, hey, look, reporters, liberals, and racists, do you compare yourself to other black quarterbacks, Donovan McNabb? Do you compare yourself to the likes of Cam Newton? Do you compare yourself to black quarterbacks like Doug Williams? Doug Williams, who was here as a Redskin, won a Super Bowl with the Redskins. Do you compare yourself to other blacks who have gotten large media attention? Do you consider yourself to be like Warren Moon, who is a successful Negro playing a otherwise white man's position? It's 2013. Well, it was 2012. Then, still asking the question about whether or not Robert Griffin III is comparing himself to other blacks. Robert Griffin's response to that was, if I want you to compare me to anybody, I want you to compare me to a Joe Montana. I want you to compare me to a John Elway, as well as Warren Moon and Doug Williams. I'm not in this business of being celebrated for my blackness. I want to be celebrated because I'm a damn good quarterback. I don't get into that. And this, of course, upset Rob Parker because he thought that in that claim, he's separating himself from his blackness. When the white man asks you whether or not you're black, you talk about being black. The white man asked you a question, nigga. And you go out there and talk about the nigger cause. You're on the stage, boy. Go out there and go promote the cause. Don't you go ruffling no feathers. You ain't like the rest of them. You're a nigger quarterback. You understand me? You're a nigger quarterback. And wear that proud. You're different, boy. Go out there and be a nigger quarterback. And celebrate your niggerdom. Rob may not agree with that. Rob's like, ah, dude, you're way over the top. Rob, it's no one's fault but your own. You said that he's separating himself from his blackness. Don't believe me? I'm going to take your own word for it. Here's Rob Parker in a conversation on some show called Flashpoint. I don't know if it's local or it's internet or whatever, but here's him talking about what the conversation that Negroes are having at the barbershop. About Robert Griffin III. This is the conversation they're having.
It was just a conversation that's had in the black community when athletes or famous entertainers or whatever push away from their people. And that's really what it's about. You saw with O.J. Simpson and some other people where they say, well, I'm not black, I'm O.J. So it's more about that, not about RG3 and you know, what's going on. It's more about this thing that we've battled years on why people are pushed away from their people.
RG3 pushed away from his people by saying he wanted to be judged as a man who played the game of football. But Rob Parker wants him to be a nigger quarterback. Well, he wouldn't say that. He would say be a black quarterback. I want you to be a black quarterback. I don't want you to be just a quarterback. I want you to be a black quarterback because that's more important. I mean, I would just ask the question, you know, are the Jews making a big stink out of, you know, a Jewish kicker? But it's got to be on your sleeve every day, doesn't it? Because he doesn't want to be seen as a black quarterback as opposed to a good quarterback, he's got to be pushing away from his race. Sal says, just don't call me Steve McNair, baby. He said, do not repeat. Too late. Well, Steve McNair was a great quarterback. Well, I know you're talking about his untimely death. Yes, I know. I understand. Excuse me. But Bob Parker has got an issue. See, the thing about it is that how are you ever going to be a man equal to all men if every time you turn around, someone has to point out your blackness? I mean, would it be just as – I mean, Jeremy Lin, what perfect example. Jason Whitlock, that cornball. By the way, I know I didn't tell you guys this. You know, I sent Jason Whitlock a little tweet not too long ago where I had to check his fat ass. And he ended up retweeting it, and his fans got angry at me like I gave a good goddamn. And had posted on Twitter, oh, he's a conservative that was accused of raping a 12-year-old girl. That's what they said. Dead ass. As if to say, oh, yeah, well, his comments are illegitimate because he got accused. And I took it to each and every one of them. I said, yeah, posted it on my own website. You want to know the full story, just go to resetemradio.com. I didn't shy from it. I took it right to their face. They all ran like bitches. Didn't have another comment. Once they found out, they was like, oh, okay, well, he talks about his own trials and tribulations. They ran like bitches. But Jason Whitlock, another perfect example. What did he do after Jeremy Lin was success at the New York Knicks? Started making derogatory claims about Jason Lin's manhood. Jeremy Lin's manhood. Making references to his alleged small penis. And then in the same breath, a guy like Jason Whitlock is making arguments about how people are disrespected for their skin color in the black community. Screams racism here, there, and everywhere. But then mocks Jason Lin for being Asian, suggesting that he has a small penis. By the way, that's not a liberal thing. That's a dumb nigger thing. Because as I expressed before, this is typical nigger-ish. It's real typical. This is something that you can expect from those in the like your Rob Parker, like your Jason Whitlocks, uneducated, ill-informed, fool-ass Negroes, Tom Joyner, Steve Hardley, funny, the like. Now, most people would say, well, you know, Reese, these guys have the biggest voices. You're absolutely right, folks. They do. They have the biggest voices. And they're idiots. Sheer and utter idiots. Always will be, always have been. Don't let anybody ever tell you any different. And you can expect that each and every one of the people who follow them and listen to them on their shows are just as stupid. They'll be the first to tell you, I'm dead, you and you to call me stupid. Yes, you are. If you take anything that Tom Joyner, Steve Hardley, Michael Bazden, Rob Parker, Jason Whitlock, Michael Eric Dyson, Tavis Smiley, all hell do I have to go there, Cornell West, Al Sharpton, Jesse Jackson, a crapload of Negro intelligentsia. If you follow any one of these people, you're all a bunch of fool-ass niggas. You can't think for yourself. If you agree with anything that comes out of these morons' mouths, you're just as stupid as them. Because I'll just give you one quick scenario. Who's challenged them? Where have they been challenged in debate? Where have they faced up against their opposition? Those with enough education and know-how to set these fool-ass Negroes straight. Where have they been where they have been engaged in healthy debate? In an exchange of ideas, they've been nowhere. When you are preaching to a choir, that means that everyone in the room agrees with you and believes what it is that you have to say without once being challenged. These are not people with guts. These are not people with brains. These are not the wizards of smart. These are people who speak to their own constituents and hide and cower within them. And then call themselves brilliant, irreverent, prolific. When truth be told, they're just a bunch of dumbass niggas. That's a fact. Just a bunch of dumbass niggas. With a bunch of dumbass nigga followers. That's effed up. I know it is. But that's all they are. That's all they have. It's a bunch of dumbass nigga followers. And they know it. And they love it. They love that you all agree. They all know that you are going to shake your head and nod at every stupid nigga thing that comes out of their mouth. Oh, hell, it's the nigga show today. Oh, Sally D's got a comment. Sally, I know you want no parts of this, man, but I'm going to let you go on anyway.
You know, you've been on a roll for the last 40 minutes. Where you begin? But, you know, I'm going to throw something out here. I feel like I know you pretty well. And,
okay.
When I hear this topic, and this isn't the first time you've brought this is a big topic for you.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to ask you straight out, are we talking about Robert Griffin III or are we talking about Rhys Hopkins? I really feel at times you're expressing your frustration through these other people who just want to be recognized for what they do and who they are and not their color. Would you agree to that, or is there any truth to that?
Yeah, I would. One, you know what? That's... You know, I have to agree with you there, Sal. I will never lie to you, my friend. Never lie to you.
I'm saying that's a bad thing.
No. The comments that are made about people like Robert Griffin III, the comments that were made about guys like Herman Cain, the comments that are made about guys who I know and love personally, like Alan Keyes, you know, Alan West. The comments that are made about them, you know, I'm fed up, man. I'm fed up. And I get it a lot from, you know, people who are so-called the authoritarians of blackness. And, you know, I'm sick and tired of these people being able to go willy-nilly, pretty much just go off on certain African Americans or black people and talk about their quote-unquote authenticity. And the people who follow them, you know, there's a larger voice. That's the sad part about this, Sal, is that they have a larger voice than people like myself, RG3, and the aforementioned. You know, those people have a larger voice than us. There isn't enough of us. And because there isn't a large enough voice on the right of this issue, we get drowned out by guys like Tom Joyner. And I'm fed up.
I don't blame you. You know, thing about it, man. It's like trying to convince a liberal that they're wrong. You realize, I think, deep down, you will never win this battle with these type of people. And the RG3s of the world and the Alan Keys and yourself, whether it's a black issue, whether it's a conservative issue, or just common sense, people, I'm a firm believer that people are not capable of critical thinking anymore. And so the easy thing to do is hit someone in an emotional place and something that has been bred into them for years, some comment, some, you know, something the parents maybe taught them or they learned through their friends, and it's so much easier to just believe that than to, like, look at life differently. And I think it's just that simple. That's the sad part.
But you know what?
Because I just see that it's ever going to change.
But you know what? It's interesting that you say that about hitting them in an emotional place. I want to tell you something today, Sal. My friends over at a guy called it's called the Jay King Morning Show. They do a show at 11 o'clock Eastern Standard Time on Blog Talk Radio. And Jay King is one of the former lead singers of the classic R&B group called Club Nouveau. Remember them?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Now, Jay King and I have become very, very fast friends on the air. I'm on his show all the time. And this morning I was on his show, and people were asking me questions. He has a predominantly black audience. In fact, I would say it's probably like 99-1 predominantly black audience. And when I call up on the show, it's always the same constant lines over, you know, Reese is a Republican, he's married to a white woman, he thinks he's white. I get all of that. So I never lose my cool. I don't flip out, I don't get angry, but, you know, whatever it is. So people, immediately because I've become so popular on the show, wanted to know my background. So I told them a little story today about my mother, whom pretty much from the hood, had five children out of wedlock, and was a single parent. And I use the term that I often use here on the show, is that when my mom was young, she had me when she was 20, she had my sister when she was 18, she was unwed, she was on welfare, and I use the term nigger bitch. She had a nigger bitch mentality. And the black women on Jay King's show lost.
Went off.
They lost. And the whole argument was, I can't believe you referred to your mother as a nigger bitch. It didn't matter that I said, well, my relationship with my mom 40 years later is a brilliant relationship. Love my mother. My mother called me 2 days ago. She's my mama. I'm her baby boy. She loves me. We love each other. Even my mother acknowledges her ridiculous behavior growing up. She understands that she made mistakes. And if you were to ask my mother, did she have a nigger bitch mentality when she was a kid, she would compare it to the young girls that she sees today, and she would go, abso-freaking-lutely. I made that clear. But they couldn't get past it. It was because I used the term nigger bitch. Here is a woman they've never met. Here's a person they knew nothing about and knows nothing about their background. But me using the term nigger bitch drove them nuts. And they said, well, when I think of my mother, I know my mother was this and she had to succumb to circumstances and all this. I said, whoa, 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 whoa. So you've decided to excuse her for her behavior. I didn't do that. My mother acknowledges who it is that she was, and it's a part of the past. My mother's not a nigger bitch today, but if you were to ask me to describe who she was then, that's who she was. And it drove them up the wall because they couldn't believe it. And when I say it incited anger, Sal, it incited anger. Because they could not accept the idea that someone would degrade someone in that situation at the level that I did to accept poor behavior and to call it what it was. It was ignorant. And then the girl, the woman who's supposed to be a psychiatrist, Sal, she says that nigger is an ignorant person. I said, then you obviously didn't even hear a word I just said. My mother would admit that she was ignorant. Therefore, that would make the word nigger bitch relevant.
What you're doing, though, is hitting people in that with the words, okay, that I think they view themselves as being viewed by white people every day. So they are so incapable of hearing this come from a black man that when it does come from a black man, the initial reaction is to discard everything you've said and to just focus on those words. And the reality is, I got to ask, man, as like a talk radio host, do you feel you're making inroads into the black community?
Oh, absolutely not. I don't – see, that's the
thing. You know
thing.
What I mean? Like, they got to understand
– I'm never going to make inroads in the black community until they start accepting harsh realities. But I got to be honest with you, Sal, and you've brought this up in the past. It's because of our current administration and our current state of affairs today, our social makeup today, is that we have decided that personal responsibility is nothing. That's over. Personal responsibility is gone. Okay, it is now gone. It is everyone else's fault but our own. And with that kind of mentality, with that type of mentality, with this sort of it's not my fault, it's theirs sort of mentality, we are going to look at a group like the African American community, the Latino community, and any other minority for that matter, to not take responsibility for their actions. So a guy like me, who shoves it in your face and says, yes, nigga, it's you. Deal with it. They're going to sit up there and go, but it can't be. So they're going to do everything in their power to combat that. Look, every other psychiatrist, psychologist says, it ain't my fault, it's society's. I'm not responsible. And when somebody like me pushes back, they go, I'm sorry, all of the other evidence proves otherwise. It's not me, it's my society. Can't get a job because of the white man. Can't pay my mortgage because of the rich folks. Can't do this because it's always somebody else's fault.
I absolutely agree. And so the final point I wanted to make is I believe these broadcasters know this just like you do. And so what they do is all they're doing is trying to secure their base by pandering to the base, but using it in a sports context when really all they're doing is trying to win favor with these people so they can remain on the air and be on-air personalities. I don't really think that I don't know the guy's name. The guy who made the comments about the cornbread brother, whatever it was.
Cornball brother, Rob Parker.
I don't believe in his own home, if he's hanging out with his guys, that they're talking about that. You get what I mean? Like, I really think it's all to play to the audience that serves them. Because
yeah, but you know what? Although that audience may be solid, it never grows. And in this business, see, that's the thing that scares me to death, is that audience never grows. It always stays the same. And in this medium, if it isn't about growth, it's about failure. I can reach 10 people every day. But you know what? I look at my stats on blogtalkradio.com, and you know what? If my stats go down, I get pissed. If my numbers go up, I am I am excited when my numbers go up because that means I'm reaching a broader audience. You know what I mean? And that's what it's about. If these people that just want to deal with their base, you know what I mean, then they have a very, very short lifespan, very short lifespan in this medium. And that's the bottom line. And trust me, they'll realize it. We'll be back. Top of the hour. I got to get into Joe Biden as soon as we get back. Thank you, Sal. I always appreciate you calling, man. If you want to stick on the line, please do. If not, we'll see you later on. It's Reese on the Radio. We'll be back right after this.
This Save Us Chuck Minute is brought to you by Common Sense Everywhere, except in Washington.
I have had a barrage of tweets recently from people telling me that Americans do not need guns for personal protection, that it's the job of the police to keep us safe. As someone who wore a badge, I assure you it is not the job of police to keep you safe. In fact, there have been over 10 court decisions on the issue, with the essence being you, and only you, are responsible for the security of you and your family. The job of the police is to protect society as a whole, not provide individual security, no more than it is the job of the FDA to make sure you eat right. But don't tell Michelle Obama that. When anyone wants to disarm you, whether it be a criminal or the government, there is but one outcome: to make you weaker than they are. I'm Mark Young.
Like us on Facebook at the Save Us Chuck Woolery page and follow us on Twitter at Save Us Chuck.
Warning, the sound you're about to hear can be devastating to your ear.
I love it, I love it, I love it, I-L-O-V-E.
You're listening to Reese on the Radio right here on blogtalkradio.com.
Our hatred is nothing more than an internal defense mechanism that nature has blessed us with. Hatred is not something to shy away from, to dread, or to avoid. Hatred is our friend. Embrace it. You teach young people that hate is good.
Hate's not good. It's just necessary.
You better listen to that man. You better listen to that man. Hate is not just good. Hate is necessary. I know a lot of people don't want to admit that, but it is necessary. It's very, very necessary.
Don't let the liberal media tell you how to think and feel. If you have hate in your heart, let it out. Open up your heart and let that hate out.
Open up your heart and let that hate out. It will kill you. By the way, I don't know whether or not you guys know this, but they say that if you have anger, and you express anger, that it actually helps you live longer. See, some of these docile son of a bitches, they die real quick. Have that hatred in your heart. I know some people will probably say if the Negroes start believing that, they're just going to express hate all day. Nah, that's all right. Cornbread and ham hocks are going to destroy them.
Yes, that's the hate equalizer.
Exactly, that's the hate equalizer. Fatty foods.
Hot water cornbread.
Yeah. Hey, you know, I remember, JC, it's funny, stay on the line. I remember, look, when I was in Rikers Island, I got into this conversation with a guy, you know, at bedtime. We were in our cots, you know, in our dorm. And, you know, they kept trying to call me a bougie, you know, black guy because I didn't eat soul food. It's like, look, I don't like it. It doesn't taste good to me. It's not appetizing. Anyway, so one of them got angry at me when I asked the question about cornbread. And he was like, you don't eat cornbread? I was like, I won't touch this stuff. He's like, are you serious? You haven't had cornbread? I said, yeah, I had cornbread when I was a kid, but cornbread confuses me. And he was like, what do you mean it confuses you? I said, what's the deal? Is it a dessert or is it a biscuit? Like, do you have it with the meal or do you have it after the meal? Like, I can't seem to figure out whether or not it's bread or cake.
And you know why? More than likely, the reasons why you were confused is because whomever fed you cornbread fed you that box crap, that Jiffy.
Absolutely.
And it's sweet.
I've never had homemade cornbread in my life. Never.
Yeah.
I've always had
bread. But
if I did have it, I do remember having it at one of those Dallas BBQs. Are you familiar with those restaurants?
Yeah.
Okay. I've had it there before, and that tastes very, very similar to the quote-unquote, you know, cornbread I had at home,
that my mother and my
sister was famous for making.
It's the number one brand in the country.
It is.
There are several knockoffs, but they all taste the same. There is a such thing as real cornbread.
Is this, wait, but Because cornbread, is it supposed to be sweet? Or at least somewhat sweet?
Well, it depends. It kind of depends on who cooks it, to be honest. Sugar was added to make it a little more appetizing.
Okay.
But it's a really dry bread. A really dry bread.
So in essence, it's a biscuit-like sort of product.
Right, and it was meant to eat with the collard greens, which are really, really moist.
Right, so to
wet.
Soak up a lot of the collard green juice.
Or as they call it, pot liquor.
Pot liquor?
Pot liquor.
Okay, see, I'm not familiar with this. You are enlightening me with the soul food.
Yeah, the juice from the collard greens is called pot liquor.
Right, okay. Look, I will, listen to me, I will find something to give away if I can. I'm going to try to find something to give away. If someone could explain to me the significance of grits and why this is relevant. Now, I don't know if guys like Sally D up in Massachusetts, I know it's a southern food. I don't get the grits. I never will understand it. It was a big thing when I was a kid growing up. One of my stepfathers.
Sally D would get the grit thing. Sally D would get the grit thing.
Okay, so when I was a kid, my stepbrother's dad, well, I shouldn't say my stepbrother, he's my brother, Briggs and Zakiah, their father, Briggs Sr., he would, every Sunday morning, would cook grits, and he would fry chicken in some gravy.
Right,
and
fried chicken.
Yeah, fried chicken and gravy, and that was our Sunday morning brunch.
Right.
It was always, you know, this brownish gravy.
They would fry the chicken, pour the grease off, leave the bits in the bottom of the pan with a little bit of oil in there still, tablespoon of flour, salt, pepper, pour water in it, and stir it till smooth.
Booyah! That's exactly the ingredients. You nailed it. So apparently this is Negro Universal.
That's pan gravy.
Okay, that's pan gravy, right. He would make this as our Sunday brunch every Sunday. I had to eat it all the time. And I never understood the significance of grits. And when you ask someone, it's always like, oh, it sticks to your ribs. I know that's a euphemism for, like, you know, it's a filling meal.
That's a euphemism for a filling meal, but it also sticks to your skin. Ask Al Gritz, a.k.a. Al Green, who had it. No. It's that wife beater equalizer. Because of its stickability.
See, to me, it tastes like white sand. That's all it tastes like to me.
Well, that's because it's cooked wrong.
It's got no flavor. You have to add flavor to it.
It's cooked wrong, dude. Do you like farina? You ever had farina?
Of course, but you add sugar and butter.
Well, it's the same deal. You can add sugar and butter to it.
That's farina.
Yeah, but you can add sugar and butter to it. It's just, it's not as, farina's a little more fine, and grits are a little more coarse.
Let's get a real southerner.
Let's get Chef Negro Boyardee.
White Mike is on the line. I knew this would pique your interest, White Mike.
Man,
are you a grit fan?
Of course, but what you're not realizing is that yuppie white liberals in New York City pay big dollars to go to fusion restaurants and serve polenta.
Polenta, right. Yeah, polenta and grits are pretty much the same deal.
Yeah, it's a staple peasant food. It's eaten all across Europe, all across South America. Anywhere that poor people needed a filling meal, some sort of cornmeal mush, which is what this is, has been eaten. I mean, you used to hear it on the Little Rascals.
Or porridge.
Right? They talk about having cornmeal mush or porridge. It's the same thing.
So, wait a minute. So, are you saying
right, polenta, up in those foo-foo restaurants up in New York where you sit down with your Pinot Grigios, and what they'll do is they'll make a pan of polenta, which is basically grits, let it chill to get hard, cut it into squares, drop it onto a hot griddle with a little bit of butter, stick it on a plate with some parsley, and sell it to you for $23.
Oh, my goodness. I've never been there. But wait a minute. What is the fascination with the grit? Like, I don't get it. Like, why is this a delicacy? I mean, in the South, this is a delicacy. I remember that famous line in the movie My Cousin Vinny. And
right.
You know, he asked the Southern guy about how long it takes him to make his grits, and I think he asked the question about do you make regular grits or instant grits? And the guy says, no, self-respecting Southerner makes instant grits. So
right.
This is like a big deal in the South.
Yeah, I think that's a little overblown, dude. I mean, a lot of people eat instant grits.
That is.
There's nothing wrong with instant grits or quick cook grits. You know, not everybody has 3 hours to store a friggin' pot of grits for breakfast.
What is it just a
and
staple?
And sometimes the quick
is
grits are pretty damn good.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with instant grits, man.
I wouldn't screw with the little packets of grits, though.
I don't even mind the packet of grits with that synthetic red-eye gravy. That shit's fine, man. That's tasty.
I got to draw the line there.
I've never, ever been one. Like, I've tasted it. I've had friends who were really big on it. They talk about it like it's, like, you know, like it's literally, like, Southern delicacy, and I just can't get it. I've never gotten it.
I was talking to my brother the other day, who's getting ready to buy. He's getting ready to open up as soon as they get done hardwiring it. He's got a food truck he's about to hit the road with,
mm-hmm.
and we're working on his menu. And I told him, you know, get one of those styrofoam pint containers. I told him, you know what you do? Because grits are real cheap. I mean, you get a lot for your money for those.
And you make
you some grits, and you get those, not the brown and serve sausages, but the Jimmy Dean roll. Well, Parks make a good sausage like that, too, and you can buy them in bulk. You brown it up like ground beef, but you got to ground it up. Make your grits, your sausage, and put a scrambled egg and toast on top, and call it a cup of junk, a breakfast cup of junk. It'll cost you not even 45, 50 cents to make, and it'll sell for $4 or $5.
Yeah, but I don't mind the sausage. I don't mind the egg. Each of these things have flavor to some degree. The grits, on the other hand, have no flavor to me.
Well,
and I think
and it's just that those would flavor them. And make it fun.
Yeah,
you have to kind of like to taste the grits as well.
You ever eat plain oatmeal without butter or sugar on it? It's horrible.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean,
Or plain pasta. You ever eat plain dry plain spaghetti with no sauce or no butter? I mean, goddamn.
Yeah, but the grits are the only thing that I know of that you can make. All you do is put some butter and some salt on it. I guess you're making my argument. I mean, I guess you gotta have pepper.
You gotta have pepper. Butter and salt just don't cut it. You gotta have pepper.
Yeah, or hot sauce, or I'll throw a fried egg on top of that sucker, or cheese.
Yeah.
Cheese grip is real big down here.
Yeah, that's
so.
Huge.
In essence, it's what it's made for is for its filler, as opposed to like I guess a modicum of taste. In essence, you eat some grits and it fills you up fast.
And not only that, but it takes on the flavor of whatever it is that you cook with it.
It fills the same position as like pasta does in the Italian food. You know,
right.
Pasta is just a matrix for delivering sauce and meat.
Right.
Pasta itself is not delicious.
No,
it's
you're
okay,
absolutely right about that.
You know.
Unless you fry it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just
and brown butter.
I just never ever got the fascination with it. And people talk about grits. In this fashion that it's like the most amazing thing that's ever happened to them, and I just never got it because.
And I believe all it is a tiny little piece of the kernel from the actual corner of the cob.
That all it is?
Yeah.
Ugh. Well, to me that just sounds insane. I don't know. Just I've just call me weird or whatever, but I hated it when my stepfather used to make that stuff. Hated it. Drove me up the wall.
Love it every now and again. I can't eat it every day, but every now and again, yeah, I want, especially fried fish and grits.
I don't know. Anyway, it's never been a big deal to me. Excuse me. Hey, Mike, I'm glad I got you on the line. I want to talk to you about Alex Jones. You're a big fan of this guy, aren't you?
Oh, yeah, Alex is great.
Okay, well, I have to admit, look, I was a little upset at this, and I didn't get the audio here on this, but I wanted to bring this up to you, and I was hoping that you'd be on. You know, Alex Jones was on Piers Morgan a couple of nights ago.
Oh, yeah, he was on with that sanctimonious douchebag.
Yeah, exactly. Now, look, I don't have anything against Alex Jones, but, you know, I have to admit, Alex Jones got set up at the end of that interview. You know what it was about, right?
Oh, yeah, of course.
All right, so it was about September 11th.
Yeah, I know. I mean, Alex has his beliefs, and, you know, I'm not a truther, but the Building 7 thing does bother me, too. Nobody's ever given me a good explanation as to why that building fell down. But the American people are so convinced that the official story is real that you pretty much can't bring that up to anybody or they'll think you're crazy.
Right. Now, Alex Jones, folks, if you didn't get to see it, please look for it online. I'm sure you can find it on CNN.com. Just go to Piers Morgan's page, and you can watch the interview. Alex Jones, InfoWars, and what's his other site? What's his other popular site?
He's got PrisonPlanet.com.
PrisonPlanet.com. That's it. You can go to his site, but you can watch the interview. And Alex Jones is. He's kind of and this is what I like about him. He is absolutely like, forget about it. This guy is unleashed. That's what I like about him. If there's anything that I like about a guy, that's in this medium is that they're unleashed. They don't give a crap what it is they say. And they're not going to be censored, and they go off when they go off. But I didn't like the way that he was. I can't say that he was portrayed, but he portrayed himself on the Piers Morgan show. Because here was a conversation that was supposed to be about gun control, which then went off on his tear where Piers Morgan took the opportunity to make him look like a kook when talking to him about being a 9/11 truther. But here's – I don't know whether or not you got this audio, and I'm sure you probably did. But Piers Morgan then had a couple of guests on his show after the interview, and this was said – about that whole exchange between Piers Morgan and Alex Jones. And see, this is where I talked about it a couple of days ago. I think it was on the day that we got back about how we need to attack the left. But listen to what was said about Alex Jones by apparently a Pulitzer Prize winning author.
I don't care what the justification is that you're allowed in this country to own a semi-automatic weapon, much less a handgun. But what do you need a semi-automatic weapon for? The only reason I think you need it is, Pierce, challenge Alex Jones to a boxing match, show up with a semi-automatic that you got legally, and pop him.
I'd love to see that. In uniform.
So here's some bitch talking
you know
about, I'd love to see that. I'd love to see Alex Jones get shot in the boxing ring.
That was Abby Huntsman.
Yes, Abby Huntsman. Yeah, the Pulitzer Prize winning author.
That's John Huntsman's daughter, the girl.
Oh, John. That's right. That's John Huntsman's daughter saying that she would love to see Alex Jones be shot in the ring by a semi-automatic weapon.
Yeah, and what the hell? How is that acceptable? You know, why isn't she being brought up on some kind of charges for? I don't know, instigating the murder of an American citizen.
Exactly.
These people are in their goddamn minds. They're evil.
And I was upset that Alex Jones, apparently Alex Jones was watching, according to his website, he was watching Piers Morgan that night when they were talking about it, and he was there with his family watching that when it occurred. When these comments came out, And look, I'm sorry. Look, I'm going to be the first to say it, Alex. I don't think that you're in fear of your life, or nor do I believe that your children think that. I don't believe that. I didn't like that sort of hyper reaction to this. But that being said, I don't believe that you should not respond to this, because for anybody to think that that was funny or that was humorous is in and of itself ridiculous. So
I'm, let's kill this man with whom we disagree. To be
yeah,
so funny.
Exactly.
These people are disconnected from reality.
Well, somebody over there needs to be slapped in their mouth.
Yeah.
You know, I would be the first person to say that. If I were Alex Jones, I'd just simply walk up there and say, "Hey, Pierce, Alex Jones, remember me? Ah!" Nice little slap in the mouth and just say, "Now go get your AK-47 or your AR-15 and pop me now."
And
I've popped
Morgan
you in the mouth.
Piers Morgan's a piece of shit. He got basically run out of England for an email hacking scandal.
Exactly.
He's a failed reality show host, and his ratings are in the toilet. He couldn't follow Larry King. And he's not an American who's using his position of influence and his megaphone to try to affect our rights. And, yeah, it does bother me. Who the hell are these people to tell me what I can and can't own? And they use the term semi-automatic because it's a loaded term. But if you have half a brain, you know in the English language what the prefix semi means. It means partially,
right?
As in it fires one round at a time. A semi-automatic rifle is no more lethal than a lever-action cowboy rifle.
Exactly.
But they use semi-automatic because the average American is a friggin' moron and doesn't know how to use English language.
Because when they hear the word semi-automatic, and we've had this discussion before, they're under the impression, and it's funny because it's the nuance, Mike. Here's the real nuance of this, is that when people hear the term semi-automatic weapon, and if you've never had a semi-automatic weapon, if you never fired a gun or have no experience with guns, people are under the impression that, and I've said this before, that if you pull the trigger once, that it continuously fires bullets.
But
is that a
reflection on how ignorant Americans are, that the term is right in their face and they can't understand what it means?
Of course, but Mike, of course. Of course.
I mean, it's,
when they hear
semi-automatic
rifle.
Do they understand what semi-conscious means?
But no. Listen to what I'm saying, Mike. When they see these videos of those guns being fired, do you ever notice that you see the person firing the gun? You never see their finger on the trigger. You
mm-hmm.
only see the barrel of the gun, and you see the bullets going bop, 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 bop. They never show the finger actually pulling the trigger each time the gun goes off. They never show the trigger. They never show the trigger finger. They only show the big – because remember, people are affected by images. And the image that's being skewed here is the barrel of the gun, the fact that the gun is popping, but you do not see the gun, the trigger finger, continuously mm-hmm. pulling the trigger. So when you see the gun being fired that often, or, you know, the conversation, great part of the conversation that was levied yesterday about the John Holmes shooting at the Aurora movie theater was that the big trailer or lead part of the story was that there were 30 rounds fired in 27 seconds. And that was, in and of itself, it was saying, oh, my God, a guy fired 30 rounds in 27 seconds. But they're not telling to you that in order for him to fire those rounds, he had to pull the trigger each time to let off 30 bullets. He had to fire the trigger pin 30 times. They
yeah,
won't tell you
a,
that
if it
because
was a
that,
fully
of course,
automatic rifle,
destroys the argument.
Yeah, if it was a fully auto rifle, he'd have dumped that magazine in a couple of seconds.
Exactly.
And I used fully automatic rifles when I was in the military. And it's a different ballgame, buddy.
Well,
and as
you know
a matter
what?
Of fact, it turns out that fully auto fire is so inefficient that I don't think the U.S. government even issues true fully auto weapons to its people anymore. They have a 3-round burst.
Well, I'll give you a perfect example of this, Mike. My naivete, I'm going to give you a great story. Back in 1998, 99, I was working at Caesar's Palace in Atlantic City. And I worked for a limousine company. I was a dispatcher there. And one of my drivers was a former NYPD detective. And at that time, the big story was the Sean Bell shooting, you know, the day before his marriage in Queens. I'm sure you remember that story.
I remember that one, yeah.
Okay. Shot 51 times by the New York City Police Department, an undercover division in South Jamaica, Queens. And because I knew nothing about it, and of course I wasn't in radio at the time, and I was very caught up in the outrage listening to the media and what the media was telling me. And the one particular officer who was of Arab descent who had fired 31 shots from his semi-automatic 9mm. And I got into this discussion with the former NYPD officer, and I said to him, I broke it down to him, and I said, this guy fired 31 times in a 17-bullet clip. How did he pull that off in a matter of seconds? Is what I said. It was like, this appears malicious if you look at it from that level. I said, can a person really, you know, can do that? And he looked at me and he said, absolutely. Now, I never been a police officer, never fired a 9mm. Here's a guy who's done it, and me, an ignorant son of a bitch, question him about that. Really? Are you kidding me? He looked at me and he said, have you ever fired a gun? And I said, yeah, but I fired a rifle. He says, you ever fired a 9mm? I said, no. He says, then why would you tell me that I didn't know what I was talking about? It's a service weapon. I've fired it before. And I said, you can really get off there. And he explained it to me, how it could be done. And that woke me up. I was going, wow. Like, I had really been manipulated into believing that it was impossible when it was quite possible for someone to let off those kinds of rounds in that amount of time. Shoot, and I said, can he do it in 2.5 minutes? He said to me, dude, I can let off a full magazine in less than a minute. And when he explained it to me, I was completely baffled, and then I saw it happen at a gun range. And I said to myself, how stupid am I? And that's what the collective today believes and thinks that they know, because they've never fired a weapon before. And what do you do with people who don't have the proper information? You manipulate them and believe any otherwise.
Yeah, and I think that they're – John Stewart had a rant about gun control on The Daily Show. And I usually like Stewart, even though he's totally a leftist. He's usually a little more fair than he was on this one. But when Alex talked about the history of gun control in the world, everything he said was absolutely true. The only reason for a government to want to disarm the populace is to dominate them. It's happened time and time again. It did happen with China. It happened with Russia. You know, before the communists took over, Russia was one of the most heavily armed societies on earth. And after the communists took over, they took their guns and they killed a ton of people. It was millions of people they killed. Mao did the same thing. Castro did the same thing. Hugo Chavez doing the same thing. And, of course, Hitler. For people like Stewart to just dismiss that out of hand and say, oh, tut, tut, you silly tinfoil hat-wearing lunatic, that'll never happen. Why? What makes America different?
You know, it's interesting because I watched that same audio today, Mike, where he made the comment at the end of his diatribe about a Hitler that doesn't exist. You remember that at the end?
Uh-huh.
That was the part that captured me the most, because I listened to it. I thought a lot of it was funny and it was humorous. I disagreed with it. But when we made that comment about a Hitler that doesn't exist, I said, you know, that's where the naivete begins, is that because there was a Hitler doesn't mean that there can't be another. Because if that were the case, we wouldn't have a Chavez. We wouldn't have a Castro. We wouldn't have a Mubarak. We wouldn't have a Morsi, for that matter. You know, if there was a quote-unquote fictional Hitler, so to speak.
Well, the average American, the person who gets bent out of shape over Sandy Hook, and I'm not going to say that having a bunch of first graders get shot is not a horrible thing, because it obviously is. But in the grand scheme of things, that's a drop in the bucket. More people die, more kids die in swimming pools every year than are ever shot by some psychopath.
Right.
But these people are easily manipulated by, I'm not going to say the media, I'm going to say the government. The government is using these people to push their agenda forward. And these people don't understand that they're just simply being used. There's a reason that the government is pushing this agenda. It's to get people's guns away so they can be dominated. There's no question about it. And it's the fact that Obama is now threatening executive orders to push some kind of gun control legislation through. Really? Really? I didn't really think the president had the ability to limit people's constitutional rights through executive order. But, you know, maybe I don't understand the way the country works.
You know, it's interesting that you said it, because that's, you know, Joe Biden back in 2008, you know, who famously said this, but I think a lot of people weren't listening.
I guarantee you, Barack Obama ain't taking my shotguns, so don't buy that malarkey. Don't buy that malarkey. They're gonna start peddling that to you. I got two. If he tries to pull my Beretta, he's got a problem.
If he tries to pull my Beretta, he's got a problem. And then for him to say this today, and not one person question him on it, just baffles the crap out of me.
The president is going to act. There are executive orders, executive action that can be taken. We haven't decided what that is yet, but we're compiling it all with help of the Attorney General and all the rest of the cabinet members, as well as legislative action we believe is required.
So here's a guy who says he's not going to get his hands on my Beretta just some 4 years ago, and now he's talking about executive action that's going to be taken in order to get gun control. I want to let the rest – go ahead, Mike.
Well, that's a compartmentalization of gun owners that they've been pulling for years. I'm sure Joe Biden is a trap-shooting elitist douchebag who has some expensive Beretta over and under double-barrel shotgun. And, that's never going to be affected in gun legislation at all. But that is not what the Second Amendment's about. The Second Amendment is about having enough firearm power to kill the government if you have to, period. That's
what it's
for. And we're supposed to have equity. We're supposed to have parity with the arms the standing army has. So in reality, we're all supposed to be like Switzerland. We should have fully automatic rifles in our homes, and we don't have that.
Let's let the rest of the guys get in here. Edward in Connecticut, how are you, sir?
Good. How are you doing, Reese?
What's going on? What, you had a comment?
I just wanted to say this whole, you know, thing that's happening with the everyone trying to, you know, ban weapons, guns, semi-automatic. You know, I've never heard so many people talk about something they have no idea what they're talking about. You know, you ask your average person, you know, who supports the assault weapons ban, what an assault weapon is, and they have no idea what it is. They'll say, oh, the kind of gun the guy used in Connecticut. Well, according to the state of Connecticut, that is not an assault rifle or an assault weapon. The assault weapon law in the state of Connecticut pretty much bans certain specific weapons and cosmetic things that go on a rifle, like telescopic stock and bayonet mount and grenade launcher mounts. Silly things that really have nothing to do with the firepower, the caliber of a gun.
You know what I find interesting about this? And you know, Mike brought up that thing about John Stewart, his diatribe that he had on his show yesterday. And again, another liberal using the term muskets, talking about when the amendment, when the Second Amendment was drafted. And saying, oh, you know, they don't use muskets anymore. And my big argument was, you know, muskets was the weapon of the day, but the Second Amendment has nothing to do with muskets. It has to do with its citizens not being, or for that matter, being as armed as its government to protect itself from being overthrown by its government, which is something they seem to ignore wholeheartedly. And they make this musket argument as if to say, you know, to be passive or in some way to jokingly talk about the Constitution and say, oh, well, they were talking about muskets. No, they weren't. They were talking, and they misinterpret it wholeheartedly. This is like that discussion with, what was her name, McConnell or McDonnell, who was running for the Senate seat in Virginia. They kept calling her a witch or whatever it was. When she asked the question or she responded to the question about whether or not there was a definition of church and state. And she said, there's nothing in the Constitution that says that there's a separation of church and state. There's nothing in the Constitution. And the crowd looked at her like she was stupid. But the Constitution clearly says there's nothing in it about separation of church and state. It just says that the Constitution or the Congress shall make no laws based on one religion. That's not separation of church and state. It just means that we will make no law based on a religion. Which is a baffling proposition to me, that the misinterpretation of the Constitution allows people to make these comments about muskets. As if to write the entire law off as something, I don't know, ancient for that matter.
I mean, it's totally illogical. When they first wrote the Constitution, the First Amendment, you know, there was no such concept as something as internet. So because the internet didn't exist at the time, does the First Amendment not apply to the internet? It's ridiculous. It's illogical. It doesn't make any sense.
Absolutely. Hey, let's let Dennis in here. Hello, Dennis. Welcome back, sir.
Hello, sir. How are you?
I know
I was
going to
talk about grits,
this,
but... Huh?
I said, I know you've got an opinion on this.
Oh, yeah. I was going to talk about grits and fire ants, but I guess that's been preempted.
I apologize.
The thing of it is that Piers Morgan won the debate over Alex Jones. No question.
Think so?
Yeah. Given two things. Television is a cool medium, and the audience it was played to.
Gotcha.
You understand as a broadcast what I'm saying.
Exactly.
You might want to explain.
Right. He's, exactly. When you're in fair company, as it will, every argument is yours to win, even if it appears that you've lost. Because you're not in a Piers Morgan that particular night may have had a bunch of Alex Jones viewers on Piers Morgan that night, but Piers Morgan's viewers dominate that group. Because there
not only that, but because Alex Jones was screaming and yelling passionately, but that does not go well over television. Maybe radio, but not television. And
right.
Piers Morgan, even though he was fallacious in his reasoning, looked as the calm, cool Brit that he pretended to be. That's the role he had for CNN.
Yeah, in fact, in a lot of ways, a lot of people said that it made Alex Jones appear like a raving lunatic, and I hate to use that, but that's not the way I viewed it. I believed that he was passionate. I didn't like the way it looked for Alex Jones. It bothered me because I said, you know, Alex, you could have – you know, I've seen a guy like Ted Nugent on Piers Morgan, and he was just as passionate, and he shut Piers Morgan down without – appearing like he was all over the place and just going crazy.
No, one who was cool and good in his argument was Sheriff Arpaio. He shut down Piers Morgan.
But you have to handle Piers Morgan because you saw what he did to Larry Pratt. I mean, he called Larry Pratt a stupid man or something. So
right.
I understand where Alex was coming from.
I'm glad you brought that up because here's that audio because I happen to have that. I didn't like this one bit. If there's anything that destroyed Piers Morgan as a personality in any regard, was this exchange.
I think we need to ban gun control laws that keep people from being able to protect themselves. The problem is not going to go away if we ban this or that gun. We've tried that. That doesn't work. Doesn't even work in England. You've had mass murders there. All over Europe there have been mass murders. The solution is for people to be able to defend themselves at the point of the crime and not wait for 20 minutes for the police to come after everybody's dead.
Mr. Pratt was an absolute lie. The gun murder rate in countries like Britain or Germany or Australia, who've all suffered massacres many years ago, similar nature, have... They are 35 people killed a year.
Your murder rate is lower than ours. That is true.
Lower? It's 35 against 12,000.
Your violent crime rate,
they had a massacre,
violent crime rate is higher than ours, as is the violent crime rate in Australia. America is not the Wild West that you are depicting. We only have the problem in our cities and unhappily in our schools, where people like you have been able to get laws put on the books that keep people from being able to defend themselves. I honestly don't understand why you would rather have people be victims of a crime than be able to defend themselves. It's incomprehensible.
You're an unbelievably stupid man, aren't you?
It seems to me that you're morally obtuse. You seem to prefer being a victim to being able to prevail over the criminal element. And I don't know why you want to be the criminal's friend.
What a ridiculous argument. You have absolutely no coherent argument whatsoever.
That was pretty much what set everybody over the top, including Alex Jones. And I think, Mike, you're willing to agree with me, because I know you're a big follower of Alex Jones. I think that's what set him over the edge when it came to Piers Morgan.
And, you know, Alex is heated, and Dennis is right that the way Alex is on the radio doesn't really translate to television and definitely doesn't translate to Piers Morgan's show. But Piers Morgan is such an obnoxious asshole. He just manages to cover it with that British accent, because Americans think...
I don't think he covers it very well.
I think a lot of Americans think British accent means, he's better than us, or he's more intelligent than us, or something. But he's not. Piers Morgan is not classy English. He's a piece of crap. He's a tabloid journalist.
Well, there's something that was missing here, and Morgan might have been right about gun murders in the United Kingdom. What wasn't said was the amount of murders overall. Once the guns were taken away, you still get killed. What difference did it make if
it was
killed
also,
by a club or a bomb or a bullet?
He was also false about one thing, was that we're looking at a population differential that is completely ridiculous in comparison. We're looking at 315 to 320 million people versus how many in England? I mean,
he should have said maybe percentages. That would have changed.
Well, that, of course.
And the other thing, too, about the Second Amendment, and people are saying, well, you know, if you're a hunter, you don't need the heavy armor. Well, the Second Amendment wasn't written for hunting. It was written to protect yourself from the government, whoever or whomever that might be down the road.
What people also miss is when the term armor-piercing bullet is thrown out, you've all heard the lefties throw that one out, right? Armor-piercing bullet. Armor-piercing ammunition applies to any rifle ammunition above caliber 22. Your daddy's 30-30 deer rifle will go right through a vest. So when these people say, oh, we don't want to go after your hunting rifles, but then they say armor-piercing bullets, they're lying. Yes, they do. It's a backdoor way of going after everybody's deer rifle.
And if you're on
another
backdoor
method, I think, of these gun locks.
That's exactly
what I'm
talking about.
What's the sense of having a gun lock
in
your home when you need it right away?
But if you're uneducated about guns, that's where you're going to get caught out there by being, you know, misinformed or uninformed, for that matter. Sally D's back on the line. Sal, you there?
I am indeed. This conversation's gone back and forth on a few things, but I did want to mention one thing. I won't get too far afield with this thing, but this Building 7, you know, the CIA, the DOD, FBI were all in that building. And so you have to realize that you've got these two buildings going down. That area is going to be quarantined and cordoned off. And it's really the likelihood was that there was such sensitive data in that building that that building couldn't afford to stand alone. In other words, they were going to have to evacuate it. So if you're harboring sensitive national security data in this building. You don't think it's possible that that building was taken down by our government?
In other words, you're saying one of those kill switches that you have in submarines in case to avoid capture, the whole thing blows.
Well, even if that's – but wait, but even if that's the case –
the building tells it all.
But wait. But I want to go into that in the direction that you're going in, Sal. Let's say that Alex Jones has – there's something plausible about the whole deal with Building 7. And he says that he heard police officers and CBS News – had audio of officers saying, you know, move back, they're going to blow Building 7. Because that's what he said on Piers Morgan.
I didn't even hear that. I'm just – I have
– No. Watch the audio because that's what he says. He says, I have audio of CBS News with police officers telling people move back, they're going to blow Building 7. That's exactly what he said.
Yep.
Now, even if that is the case, here's the bottom line why I find that completely irrational. The one argument on September 11th when I worked at Hot 97 in New York, I got a phone call. We got a phone call on the air from somebody who lived up in Harlem. And they were pissed off that the police department was surrounding and patrolling the Ground Zero area in downtown Manhattan. And this black woman was saying, oh, I don't think it's right. All these people are downtown. Ain't nobody patrolling Harlem. Ain't they worried about Harlem getting attacked by terrorists? And I jokingly responded and said to her, bitch, what you worried about? Somebody flying a plane into the Apollo Theater? Knock it off. That was my response to her. But that being said, when I laugh about that is, if they were so concerned about sensitive information in Building 7, they had the police force, the FBI, the CIA, whomever. This was a terrorist attack, for crying out loud, 3,000 people dead. They had the means to protect if there was anything in that building. To blow it up made no sense. To destroy it makes no sense.
Yeah, but you're assuming that they would have been able to coordinate all that agreement with the local police department and that they would have been allowed, meaning the feds, and the locals would have been allowed to just stand around this building in a war zone, and there was no guarantee of that. Because it was such madness, there was no guarantee they'd be allowed to coordinate or cordon off that building. What if the mayor or somebody said, no, I don't care. You're out. Everybody's out of here. It's too much of a risk.
Well, I'm going to disagree with you. I'm going to disagree with you with the term war zone. Here's why. Because when the September 11th attacks were happening, they put Dick Cheney in the safe house, and they removed President George W. Bush from the Florida school, minutes or so, a half an hour or so afterwards. They got him out of Florida, and he was on Air Force One for an exorbitant amount of time. And then what was it? A day or two later, he ended up at Ground Zero. If this was indeed a war zone, the President of the United States wouldn't have been at Ground Zero for no reason whatsoever.
I misspoke. What I'm saying is that area, there was so much confusion, smoke, debris. You can't secure a building the way you need to in that kind of chaos. And the building was over a football field away from either one of the towers. And it went down cleanly in seconds.
And Sal, what you're saying is, in essence, maybe that this was wired to go at any time as part of the building plan when they built it to begin with, in case, for contingency.
Not a doubt about it. I firmly believe this, and I don't.
That's plausible.
I
had someone very close to me that was a radio man in the Navy, and he said what the civilians knew and what came across in the radio traffic was completely two different things.
Well, that's true.
And don't forget, the CIA, at the time this took place, was involved in the Room 641A scandal where they were tapping Americans and phone conversations without subpoenas. And that came about only because of an intelligence leak through a hacker community. So I'm telling you, I really hope this story doesn't go away because I'm convinced there's more to it. It may not be quite as extravagant as I'm making it sound, but I'm convinced there's way more involved to that. So I got off topic, but you know, the thing with what Biden's saying, it's absolutely like you're watching a movie when you hear him say we can you know, execute these executive orders. And I'm picturing, you know, them going to Americans' homes and having Randy Weaver type shootouts, you know, with these people that won't relinquish their weapons. This is,
you're talking about Ruby Ridge.
Yeah.
So his hair plugs got to his head.
You can go down the list where the government goes in and executes force, whether you want to go way back to the National Guard, shooting those people in the protest in the 60s. You know, it does happen. It sounds like it's crazy, but it does happen. And there's a reason that this shouldn't happen, meaning what Biden's talking about. But the fact that it's actually being spoken, for me, is terrifying, because I don't think you have a populace that is paying attention. So that's the advantage they have this time that they didn't have back in the day, you know, in the original American Revolution, because everybody, their livelihood depended on it, their lives depended on it. They understood a tyranny. This is absurd, but yet there's no outrage. And that's what's
speaking. Speaking of that, there was an interesting letter to the editor in today's Dallas Morning News, and it said the AR-15 is today's musket. The AR-15 assault rifle is simply the product of the evolution from long guns common to the regular military foot soldiers of the 1700s. Our founders wanted citizens to own and maintain firearms consistent with the military issue weapons of the day. Today, this world would not include RPGs, bazookas, cannons, roadside bombs, or atomic bombs, as those devices were not common to the regulars. Long guns, muskets in those days were common. It's no different from the evolution from horse and buggy to the F-150. And no one could foresee Alexander Graham Bell's telephone invention turning into the iPhone. Yet 37,000 a year died today in American roads from the fatal mix of motor vehicles and texting. That's not grounds for banning either one, but rather to call for responsible use of these devices. The Second Amendment is not about sportsmen, duck hunting, or target shooting. Guns in the hands of citizens temper the ambitions of an aggressive government. That is the purpose of the amendment.
But why, you know, it's funny because I don't understand why the left refuses to even engage in that part of the conversation about the Second Amendment. Why is that being omitted by that? Because the only argument that you hear from guys like John Stewart, you know, as Mike and I just mentioned, is this whole argument about the musket, the whole argument about hunting. They refuse to even have the conversation about a corrupt government.
But Reese, leftists are classical control people. Everywhere that you have dictatorships, it's from mostly the left, and it's from control.
Well, that's true, but the bottom line is that the
including
the left,
Hitler.
But the left isn't stupid. They can't sit here.
No, they're not stupid.
That's what I'm saying. They can't sit idly by and suggest that the possibility of a government willing to overthrow its people isn't possible in the 21st century, and then watch countries like Egypt and Libya, you know, and Jordan, Syria, for crying out loud. You know, if you really want to look at the argument, Syria has lost over 40,000 people in a civil war that has gone on for almost 2 years, and these are people who are fighting against a tyrannical government in the 21st century, and yet when the argument of gun control comes here, they say, oh, it's not possible for the government to overthrow its people. Really? Wouldn't Syria be
a perfect
example of that?
It's hubris, Reese, because they said, well, you know, those things happen in other countries. It can't happen here. We have checks and balances. Well, guess what? What happens when the levers of power are all in one side, Supreme Court and executive and legislative are all on one side? Where's the checks and balance? It's gone.
But there are no checks and balances here.
Exactly.
I mean, there clearly aren't any checks and balances here, and it's a joke to suggest that to watch a government, if a guy like Assad had the power to keep his citizens from arming themselves. Imagine, with the exception of the carnage that's already been there, imagine the carnage he would have been able to put on his people had they not been able to defend themselves.
Well, funny you mention Assad, because Assad is a member of the same Ba'ath party that Saddam Hussein was.
Absolutely.
And that's where Saddam Hussein transported his weapons of mass destruction. Don't we always say that poison gas is a WMD? But yet they said, well, when we invaded Iraq, oh, there were no weapons of mass destruction. Well, tell that to the Kurds.
Right, exactly.
But Assad is fighting against al-Qaeda. People from outside Syria have come in to overthrow his government. There are plenty of Syrians who support the Assad regime because they don't want to see their country fall to radical Islamism.
In other words, they're saying that they don't want Syria to go like Egypt.
Thank you. Yeah.
Go ahead, Edward. What did you want to say?
I was going to say that Obama and his cohorts have been, you know, materially aiding al-Qaeda in that, you know, area of the country. So they really should be locked up somewhere because that is, you know, illegal for them to do, to aid and abet al-Qaeda.
Well, Pravda had something very interesting this summer. They said, we are like the Soviet Union, is what they said. They said, we are trying to export democracy just like they failed to try to export communism. People, if they don't want either system, aren't going to accept it no matter what you do, no matter how many times you try to force it on them.
And, Reese, there was one other point I wanted to make about the left and why they never bring up the fact that the Second Amendment is, you know, primarily against the government, you know, trying to overthrow the people. They don't care. They want the government to overthrow the people. They think more government is good. So the bigger the government is, the happier they are.
Right. So to sort of distract the American people by not even having a conversation about the Second Amendment being related to a government overthrown as people, when of course it's something that it is that they want, don't even have a conversation about it. Don't even bring it up.
Look at the issue of gay marriage. Okay, just to make a point, the states that have put this to a vote of their people have overwhelmingly said we don't want gay marriage. Right or wrong, that's what they said. The left would rather the federal government come in and tell those people, oh, no, you have to do what we say. That is liberalism in a nutshell. We think it's okay. We don't care what you think. Your opinion means nothing. We're going to force it down your throat. That's how they are. You know, the vast majority of people in this country do not want gun control, as evidenced by the number of states that have concealed carry permit laws, which is something like 38 or 42 now. Mm-hmm. And the number of guns that are being sold, you know, in the past 2-3 months. But the isolated, insulated, you know, leftist intelligentsia don't care. They don't care about reality. They don't care, like when Alex attacked Piers Morgan on how England's violent crime rate went up and their firearms crime rate went up after gun control was enacted. They just la-la-la, put their fingers in their ears and say, I don't believe you, because it doesn't fit the pre-existing notion they've got in their brain. They're not normal, logical people. They're crazy.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And that's what I think the whole issue is. I mean, crazy for me is, I mean, I don't want to use the term pejorative, but I'm more afraid of the fact that I don't think so much that they're crazy. I think that they're in essence crazy like a fox. I think that to them it's agenda driven, regardless of fact, regardless of the truth. I think that it's just agenda driven, where they're just going to ignore the facts here and say, you know, the truth is what it is that I say it is.
Yeah, you can show them the statistics over and over again that areas of the country which have the highest firearms ownership rates have the lowest crime, and they don't care. Or that the so-called assault weapons, whatever that is, are a statistically insignificant amount of crime in this country, and they don't care. Because what they believe, they think is true. Typical liberalism They live their lives based on emotion and not logic.
Yeah, that I believe is the true fact here. All right, guys, thank you very much, man. It is the end of our program. We will be back tomorrow. Same bat time, same bat channel. I think I got a guest coming on tomorrow. I think we might have Michael Lohan back because we've got to talk about some other stuff. I'll let you guys know. Thank you, guys, as usual. Sally D., Edward in Connecticut, and White Mike, and Dennis the Masked Menace. For JC, the producer, and Mary Mary, why are you bugging, who's coming in late tonight, we will see you guys tomorrow. Same bad time, same bad channel. It's Reese on the Radio, and we'll holler at you tomorrow. Talk to you then. But the END, follow me into the sun, let your soul be free. The END, the END, the END, the END, the END. Now this ain't nothing but the END.